But first, here's our friend Glenn Healy, who's with us on the program. Hello, Heels. How are you?
Good luck beating that hour, boys.
You're going to have to be even better than usual today, Heels.
I was lucky enough to work with him. And I think every Canadian, we all try to emulate that voice and imitate him. And working the many times that I did with him, I always got busted. And Bob didn't like it when you did Bob. You know, oh, baby, for sure, you know. And he'd look at me and say, are you doing me? I look at him and go, yeah, I was. Is that okay? But there's so many stories that I have doing games, and they're kind of quirky and fun. There was a series we did between Montreal and Boston where they had us drive on a bus because it was too expensive to fly with the CBC. So we drove on the bus, and there would be Bob two seats behind me with his headset on, singing Frank Sinatra.
There you go.
Not bad for an hour. 6 hours, please. Could we take those things off and stop? My gosh. There was the Sather got him tickets to a Yankee game. It was right behind home plate, magnificent seats, and he decided to do play-by-play in the seats during the game. And you know how New Yorkers are. They're so friendly. One of the fans told him to shut up.
So for Bob was saying for him it was Foster and then right into Bob Cole. For me, because I came along a little later, it was Bill Hewitt. He was the voice of the Maple Leafs. Dan Kelly used to hear on the NBC games, and then into Bob Cole. Was there?
Yeah, and they were all part of my history too. But right. I mean, those were the two.
And for me also, occasionally we'd get a Montreal game on Saturday night.
And Danny Gallivan.
Danny Gallivan, and then it was another
with
one.
Dick Irvin.
Who was it for you, Heels, growing up?
I would think Hewitt probably to start, and then Bob. You know, he was as iconic as you could get. But I didn't. There was two Hewitts that did it. And I didn't even notice there was a change. Their voices were basically the same, and then the handoff was made. But no, I pretty much, you know, those voices stuck with me all the way through, and it was of legend. You know, I guess the hard part that I find today, just, you know, this world of Twitter and all the other unsocial media, you know, when Foster was, you know, doing games and it was coming to an end where he wasn't doing as many or as many Saturday nights, you know, there wasn't people just absolutely taking pot shots at him. And that's what kind of bothers me a little bit about it, you know, where a name gets pronounced wrong or you have the wrong name on the back of a sweater. And here goes Twitter. It's lighting up across the globe, so to speak. He's made a mistake. They didn't happen with Foster, and it unfortunately, you know, with Bob, he's still, you know, one of the favorites on a Saturday, but Twitter loves to just sit back and take shots, and I just don't think that's
right. Well, and you would attest to this, too. I mean, the one that jumps out to me for Foster, well, let me throw it at you. Is there one name that you remember that he couldn't pronounce, he mispronounced regularly?
No, nothing really jumps out.
Couldn't say Cornoyer.
Cornoyer. Well, and
he couldn't say it. I mean, he may have made some mistakes with the Russian names in 72.
I was going to say in 72, he couldn't say. I know, I'm going to get it wrong. Harlamov.
Well, back in 1980, when I was with the World Juniors, and Knoyer was one of the coaches, I thought that was his name. Hey, Knoyer, you want to be top shelf again? He was one of the assistant coaches. But the one thing about Bob, though, every coach has the players, so much respect for him. You know, you walk into an arena, and they all are gracious. They hold out their hand, and, you know, Mr., it's not his first name. It's not Bob. It's Mr. Cole. The coaches bring him in the office. He walks out with the lines because it's important to him to have the lines. But there was one coach one time, and if it's not in his chapter book, I'm sure, that didn't decide to give him the lines, wouldn't give them to him. And, oh, boy, that coach never, ever will be seen in Bob Cole's eyes as a good man, ever. just so much fun doing games with him, the respect that players had for him. Hey, even the time that we had to make our way through the airport, and it's tough traveling in the playoffs, and you've got to go great distances, and Bob had a little small bout of the gout, and we couldn't quite make it to the gate in time, and yet they pulled the plane back and said, it's Bob Cole, we can't leave without him. That doesn't happen very often. Or ever.
Like never, yeah. There are like a handful of people that could make that happen, and none of them are on the this program
and
right now.
This summer, the pipe band made its way out to St. John's, the George Street Festival, and we played there with April Wine and a bunch of great bands. I invited Bob to come down, and as many great acts as there were musically, the Arkells, and as I mentioned, April Wine, the Mahones, Glass Tiger, The bigger act was Bob. So it didn't line up for him than any of the other ones. But he listened to the pipe band. Of course, he wanted the more traditional. We were going to do marches and reels and that type of thing. We played more upbeat stuff, a little bit of the Tragically Hip. But not down his alley, but we still had a great afternoon together. So what a wonderful career, and it just continues on. Good for him.
Was that George Street? Is that what the name of the street is that all the bars are?
I think all the bars that I had before I went there, they're dead. But, yeah, it is George Street.
Yeah.
It is probably one of the best experiences ever that I've had as a piper, as a going out and having a good time. And any Canadian that hasn't been there, they should go there. The people could not be friendlier, could not be more opening of their doors and arms and what do you need? Not, you know, what can you do for me? No, what can I do for you? It was a great experience. And that Bob there when we performed at our concert was great as well.
Weather aside, I can understand why somebody wouldn't want to leave there, and he hasn't. You know, he's been there all his life and had no inclination to go to Toronto or Montreal or any place else, because of work, and he's fine with the travel.
I used to love when the guys from Hockey Night would talk about, okay, when this is all over, I'm going to go to Hawaii and whale watch, or I'm going to go to California and whale watch, and he would listen to them for a moment, and then in that great, you know, kind of baronic tone, what the hell are you going there for? We have whales, of course.
Now you're going to get in trouble again. He's listening, Heels.
Okay.
You're in trouble again.
I'm quicker. But no, why are you going to Hawaii when we have whales right here in Newfoundland? And they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yep. But I can't wait to read the book. I'm sure it's full of some great stories. I know that when we did a playoff series in Philadelphia, and they do that great thing where they start with Lauren Hart, who's got a beautiful voice, probably the best anthem singer in the league. And she starts singing God Bless America. And the lights all go down at once, the whole building. It's shut. And you look up to the screen, and there's Kate Smith, and she finishes the song.
Yeah.
And they finish it together. And to me, there isn't a better anthem that I've ever heard. So, you know, when I listened to that, I thought, that was just magical, just absolutely amazing. We were talking about it on the ride back to the hotel, and Bob informed me that when she did that anthem in her blue dress in the 70s, he actually did the game. That would be the definition of longevity.
Yeah, he's been
I don't even know who Kate Smith was. He
oh, I can remember Kate Smith doing the anthem in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. I do too.
Oh, yeah.
And Heels is trying to make himself seem way younger than us,
which is not possible.
Now, he is old enough. If we're going to change subjects, I guess we could keep talking about Bob, but you're not young enough, since you were one of them, to know what it's like to be a Leaf goalie when things aren't going very well. And things aren't going very well right now for Frederik Andersen.
Damien, stop right there, okay? I played a game at home at the ACC against San Jose. It was 7-0, and someone threw a crutch on the ice.
A crutch?
Yeah, almost hit me. With one crutch. You know, I didn't like that, okay? And I scolded the fan publicly and in the paper. But, you know, as goalies, we go through it.
Yeah.
This is not new. This is something we all face. Mike Richter won the Cup in 94, and the next year just couldn't get it together. I ended up starting the playoffs against Joe Sakic. You know, it just happens. And
right.
It's just a matter of time before this guy with skill gets it between his ears, and the confidence comes. And when it comes, then the questions will all be gone. But we've all faced it. And some of us have faced it early in the year. Some of us have faced it late in the year. We've got golfers like Greg Norman, couldn't miss a putt, a fairway, a green at the Masters, and he got to Sunday at the back nine and went, he became me.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything you're observing right now about Frederik Andersen, do you think, that's making it difficult for him from a style point of view?
Yeah, I would say that when goaltenders are on their game, they let the game come to them. They know what net is behind them, what shooters have available. They don't chase the game.
Carey Price, a great example of that.
Great
right?
example. Right. You want to go high glove? Good luck. Covered. You try to beat me low? Covered. And he reads it off the stick so well. But he doesn't chase the game. The game comes to him. And right now, Frederik is chasing the game.
Right.
He needs to have the game come to him. Take a step back in your crease. Take a deep breath. Know what net's behind you. And all it's going to take, it might be a period. It might be two periods. And then the worm turns. But, you know, you can't go into any game like tonight saying, I got to win. No, you're not going to win. I got to make first save. I got to get through 5 minutes. I got to get through 10 minutes. And then by the time you get to the third period, you're in a position to win. And then you need some help from your teammates and to save at the right time. And you win and you say to yourself, what was all that fuss about for the past couple days? But he's their guy. They had to give him term. He had 1 year left on his deal. It would have made him an unrestricted free agent. They didn't make that big deal, giving up as much as they did, not signing him. They looked at his resume of work. He's not Bernier with 1 month under his belt. This is a guy who's got a pretty good resume, and it's a matter of time before he figures it out, gets up to game speed, gets enough reps in, and all of a sudden he's a goaltender that they, when they made their calls, they knew what they were getting.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because you mentioned Florida's in town, and James Reimer is now with the Florida Panthers, and there are those who are looking at the current situation and saying, well, why didn't they just keep Reimer? It would have been cheaper.
I hate that.
And I agree with you. But that sentiment is out there. Do you have a thought on that, Hills?
Well, here's the three thoughts I have, and they're all common. And I'm not picking on James because I love him as a guy, and he's a wonderful person. There are three things that are commonplace in the three major collapses that the Leafs have had. The first was the collapse in Boston. He was part of that. And I'm not putting all the blame on him, part of it. Then there was the 18-wheeler going over the cliff. He was part of it. And then there was the time when they were 6 or 7 points up against Detroit in the middle of March, heading into St. Paddy's Day. Bernier got hurt. His own player fell on him. And he was part of that collapse. So part of three collapses, and at some point management said, this is not the guy we're going to go forward with. We've got to upgrade that position. And I don't care about the numbers and the save percentage and all the other stuff that goes along with it. It is when it was on the line, they don't believe that he's the guy who can get it done. And so they made a radical decision to make a change in a new direction. That direction through six games hasn't worked out. But, you know, I don't think you want to push the panic button on this player with 5 years left on his deal early, this early. I think you just got to wait for him to figure it out, and that's the reason he's playing tonight.
There's no definitive answer as to Anderson's problems in the early going, but the two most common things to look at are the fact that he got hurt before the World Cup, missed essentially all of training camp, and then the other one is new place, new city, new teammates, new environment, and it isn't just another city. It's the hockey mecca, where the attention is ramped up 10 times anything he's ever experienced. Do you have an opinion on which of those two, if either of them, have been at least contributing factors?
Well, I always found playing in Toronto, I like that. I like where it matters. I like where you go to a game and people care about what's going on the ice, and they like their team and they like their players and they love the crest on the front of the sweater. And they have come for many, many years without a championship, and it just doesn't matter to them. They still, you know, love the team and love their players. And in some ways, they elevate them above what they would be elevated above on any team anywhere in the National Hockey League. So that's not as big a factor to me. The bigger one is just missing training camp and having the 200 best players in the world play in a World Cup, come out of that World Cup. They're starting at the 40-yard line, and you're starting at the goal line. They're ready to play. They've had the highest compete level maybe of any tournament other than the Sochi Olympics. And so here are these great players ready to go. And the Stamkos is ready to play, and he showed you what he could do the other night. And all the way through, the Carey Prices, the Shea Webbers, you go down the list of all the players, they haven't got off the slow starts. They've got off the running starts. And here's a goaltender who, playing in training camp, minus pretty much everybody who's any good on Toronto, and doesn't get reps, doesn't get to play. And the reason he's hurt, he's doing it for free for his country to get into an Olympic qualifier that he might not even be able to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to give him a little bit of quarter here. And I think, you know, the city's a fire because he's got a five-year deal, and whoa, here we go again. But I've seen this show before with Belfour. I've seen the show before with a number of goaltenders. And the good guys, the guys with skill, they get their confidence back, and skill takes over.
You know, goaltending often it's always on the front story in every single city. And while things are tough for Anderson right now, things are very, very good for Cam Talbot in Edmonton, where everyone is singing his praises. The Oilers are winning. Glory days are here again. But Talbot's basically the same goaltender. They're just a little more solid around him. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree, and they recognized the change in culture that they needed to make. They made a pretty bold move that they were criticized for by saying goodbye to Taylor Hall, but they didn't like some of the stuff he was doing on the ice. They didn't like some of the stuff off the ice, and so they made a culture change, and Chiarelli knows exactly what it takes to build a winner, and he's made the appropriate changes he thinks that have to be made. Is he there yet? Has he made all the changes? Not a chance. But when you start with Connor McDavid, oh my goodness, you have a chance, more than a chance. So it's a team going in the right direction with the right personnel who are running it, with what I believe to be the right coach. And, you know, they're only going to get better as time goes on. And, you know, their goaltender, life gets put into perspective when you have a child. And he's got a couple of them. And life to him couldn't be better in a lot of different ways.
A similar beginning for the Montreal Canadiens. Now, we've seen this act before in the month of October. And last year, the complete and utter collapse was attributed principally to the departure of Carey Price through injury. So far, Carey Price has played brilliantly in the games he's played, but he hasn't been the only goaltender. And yet the Montreal Canadiens have lost one in overtime. I think that's the only one, right?
Yeah.
Sustainable, real, mirage. What do you make of what you've seen from Montreal so far?
I say it's real, sustainable, and it's not just Carey Price's injury. There were a number of players that went down. Brendan Gallagher breaking his finger. That was it. He's a guy who competes and brings people into the fight with him all the time. When he went down, that was another kind of collapse for their hockey club in every different way. You know, the one thing about the dynamic in a dressing room, it can be so strange at times, and not to put it all on PK, but when you are in absolute the most dire of circumstances and the team is not playing well and you've put together a month that in 99 years the Montreal Canadiens have never put together, you just can't make it about you in a lot of ways and dress up on a Saturday like a Christmas tree. You just can't. You got to tame it down, and you've got to find a way to get back with this team and get it to win. And the one thing that Shea Weber will do, no-nonsense guy, he's a leader, and he's going to bring some calmness, stability, and leadership into the room that wasn't there last year. He brought it in Nashville in one of the weirdest dressing rooms that is in the National Hockey League. They have some players, and I won't name them, that are the quirkiest, strangest guys that need to be tamed down. And Shea's not there anymore, and that's a loss for them. And they brought in a guy who's got more quirkiness to him that is going to add to one of the strangest circus-like dressing rooms in the National Hockey League. So I think it's real, and I like their team. I like their depth. I love their goaltending. And, you know, if Therrien's not the coach for them because they don't seem to like his message, I certainly like Kirk Muller. So they got Plan B all set in place as well. Yeah. But they're a really good team, and last year was just a speed bump that shouldn't have happened.
Heels, we got to go. Always our pleasure. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you next week.
Oh, baby, for sure.